And the big book of the soul is on the table. Ian Lawton is the author. Our Many Lives as Holographic Aspects of the Source. I think there's an open wildcard line if you want to grab it. And otherwise, we'll be jumping into your comments and questions coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Ponet. So Ian Lawton is in, are you in England right now, Ian? Is that where you
I
are?
I am.
Are you having kippers for breakfast?
I'm not having kippers for breakfast, no, actually.
Do you ever eat kippers for breakfast?
I do certainly eat kippers, yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Every time I'm in England, I always think, I could never do that. I just think that's like the weirdest thing in the world for me. Do you ever eat eel for breakfast?
I haven't had jellied eel. No, I've never tried that. That's an East End thing. I've not tried in the East End of London. No, I haven't done that one.
So that's the only place where they do jellied eel?
Well, it's very popular, put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would be, I think I would. I don't know what would happen if I was at a hotel and had jellied eel. Go straight back to my cornflakes. Let me get to, let's start it off with Josh in Minnesota on Coast to Coast AM. For Ian Lawton, The Big Book of the Soul. Josh?
Hi there. Hi, Ian. I was just wondering, I haven't read your book, but I plan on it. Do you touch on Kabbalah mysticism at all?
The Kabbalah, did you say?
Yes.
Yes.
Not especially in the book, no. In fact, hardly at all. Although it is something I've looked at a little bit and discussed in some of my previous books. Did you have any particular angle you wanted to discuss?
Actually, I just wanted to mention that about 7 years ago, I had an experience where I began to, I don't know if you would call it channel or communicate with something that was giving me information about the spiritual aspect of our lives.
Yeah.
And as the years went on, it wasn't telling me to kill anyone, so I wasn't, you know, too worried about it. So I just decided to go study the spiritual aspects that other religions or doctrines had.
Yeah.
And I discovered that almost verbatim, I was being told the Kabbalah.
Okay.
And almost verbatim, your work seems to not necessarily totally mirror, but everything you've mentioned on this show tonight has about 95% similarity.
Yeah, there is a lot of similarity. I think that the problem with the Kabbalah is, for a start, there's this is obviously something that has come out of esoteric Judaism, you know, a couple of thousand years ago, and there are it's not always easy to get a good handle on exactly, you know, what different people mean by different elements of Kabbalah. Certainly, you're absolutely right. There's certainly the most aspects of Kabbalah do seem to support the idea of soul reincarnation and growth and that kind of thing. I think, of course, one of the, and it may not be very, very commendable from my point of view, but of course, Kabbalah has had some pretty bad press in many areas because people feel that it has become a very materialistic thing when you get a lot of the Hollywood A-listers joining the Kabbalah movement and throwing loads of money at it and all the rest of it. You know, that, you know, I have to say, for me, that kind of takes away from the spiritual message, and I can't help but have that reaction to it.
Well, you know, let me sort of throw in a thought on this. I think that what Josh is referring to, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on this, is a pure form of Kabbalah and the study of the Kabbalah of that tradition within Judaism has to be understood within Judaism. And when people like Madonna and others attempt to sort of slice it off of Judaism and make it be something which it was never intended to be, which was a separate standalone tradition, I think it loses so much of its value. It needs, part of what nourishes the mysticism of Kabbalah is that it's actually rooted in a very fundamental Judaic understanding of the law.
Yes.
And so it's in tension with these other very sort of pedantic, almost kind of ideas within religion. And then there's Kabbalah that's pulling at that. And that somewhere in the tension of that is where we can find truth. And so I say that to you because too often when we say Kabbalah, I'm with you. It has become something which it was never intended to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So if I look at Kabbalah, I look at Jewish mysticism, I look at Muslim mysticism and Christian mysticism, and they are about 95% in agreement with each other. You cannot every form, anytime something that's religious enters into or sort of follows the smoke of mysticism, at the very top of the teepee, they all dance around the same thing.
Yes, I think that's probably true. The most exposure I've had really to Kabbalism is through the work of people like Dion Fortune from the middle of the 20th century, much of which was channeled. I'll admit a lack of knowledge on this one here. I don't know how to what extent that mirrors the original Judaic Kabbalism or whatever. You know, it isn't a specialist area of mine, I have to say.
Well, the problem with Kabbalah is when it too often it's just perceived as a kind of alchemy or almost a kind of wizardry. And the pure understanding, I think, unfortunately, for really observant Jews who've been using Kabbalah for years, it just sort of bastardized what's really kind of a very cool thing. Yeah. All right, we'll just leave that there for the moment. Scott, first-time caller line, Baytown, Texas, on Coast to Coast for Ian Lawton. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, hey, Ian, and hello, Ian. Hey, Ian, I appreciate the books that you sent me, and I appreciate you autographed one of the advanced copies of the books. We corresponded a little bit about George.
Okay. Yes.
Yes. Hey, I'll tell you exactly how George describes spirit and soul.
Mm-hmm.
He got a chalkboard, and I was sitting with him, and he drew like a pie chart. He was trying, you know, in his sort of Russian accent, describe, you know, body, you know, mind, soul, spirit, and I just wasn't catching it. He's like, all right, you're a Texan. When you see a horse, and you say, man, that horse has spirit. But soul is what you feel. That is what draws you to God, is your soul. Does that help sort of?
Okay. For listeners, incidentally, this if I remember correctly, you were quite good friends with George Rodenayer, who's the man who had the near-death experience that we were talking about earlier on the show.
I had an extremely close relationship, and he left me his information and his wisdom out here with me right now. And you actually, the book you sent me is with it.
Excellent. Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
And thank you, Scott. I mean, let me get back to Ian on this, though. First of all, I'm glad when he's talking about Russian accent, I thought George Norrie doesn't talk with a Russian accent. Okay. I don't remember this. Now, thank you for that explanation. But you seem to balk at that idea of the pie chart and the whole bit.
Listen, we all know when we're talking about spiritual things that certain things resonate with us and certain things don't, for all of us individually. And sometimes it's because we're at different sort of stages of our experience, if you like. And, you know, some of us are ready for some things and some of us aren't, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you really just have to go with what you resonate with, don't you? As well as doing the evidential work, which I do. You know, I still have to work off my intuition sometimes. And, you know, this whole bit of the difference between the spirit and the soul, you know, it hasn't resonated with me because I haven't seen a practical application of it where I think, oh, that explains something that really needs to be explained and differentiated between. I think that's what I would say.
I totally understand that. And again, we're talking about rational spirituality with Ian Lawton, the big book of the soul. Let's go to William in Wichita on Coast to Coast. William?
Yeah, I've had past life experiences that integrate into two different cultures. I am a Black Prussian, which means Black American, Prussian American, which was during World War II. They were of different allies, if you know what I mean. I have experienced divine intervention in my life, and I think back to the furthest memory I ever had, and I was so young I can't remember, but I remember two Greek individuals. One, she she had long black hair, and the other had white hair, and they were dressed in Greek togas, and I didn't see any walls. That's the furthest memory. The other one is of Africa, which I remember women wearing pots on their heads. I would like to...
Want Ian comment on that, you mean? Ian, where are you with us? Yeah.
Sorry, is the gentleman suggesting? Are you saying that in this life, you as a child, as a young child, you had flashback memories of these things? Is that what we're saying?
Is that what you're saying, William?
I can actually think of Thoth, Hermes Trismegistus, and he had the theory. Actually, it was actually Hermes. They used to steal away in the night from his crib and steal his brother's oxen.
Okie doke. You may have lost me on that one, William, but I'll leave you, Ian, to sort that out.
Thank you. I'm afraid I'm lost as well.
Okay. And I know it's tricky because we're all talking about things that are a little on the ethereal side, yeah. But do the best you can with that. I'm going to ask back in the studio, who do we know is on line two, wildcard two? It's not on my screen. The caller in Cleveland is Mike, and I don't know, I didn't show up on my screen. So, Mike, I didn't want to leave you there any longer. You're talking with Ian Lawton. Mike?
Good morning, Ian and Ian.
Good morning.
Ian, I experienced a sea of undifferentiated after smoking three hits of DMT.
Oh, yeah.
After hearing local pagans suggest that three hits is calling for God. So I gave it a try. My two questions are, and thanks for the jovial, what is the purpose of the soul in existence? And what is there to learn in if God knows everything and we just exist so God can grow and experience?
I think you've just hit it on the head. My understanding of it, and let's be clear about this. This is the multi-million-dollar question, isn't it? This is the big one. I think it would be completely wrong for anybody to suggest that they can answer this definitively. However, I do think it's important to try and give some sort of an answer that fits in as best as possible with the context of all the different evidence that we have got on the table for both the individual soul and for the fact that we're all part of one undifferentiated source. And as you just said, I think it's the idea is all about experience. Now, there is this idea, and you're right to bring it up, that, well, you know, if the source is perfect, you know, why does it need to do anything? Well, I can't give a definitive answer to this. I've read various people who've made comments about it, and it's. I think when we think about things like that, we're tending to look at it from a human perspective, whereas I think and this is where the idea of non-duality comes in, by the way, properly comes in. I think a non-dual approach to this, or an integrated, a unitarian approach, if you like, to this would be to say, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying that the source is both perfect and not perfect, or capable of still growing and experiencing all at the same time. Both things are true. And that may not make complete logical sense to the human brain, but it would be my best guess, I have to say.
I have a question for you, Ian Lawton. What's DMT? I have no idea what he's talking about.
It's a manufactured hallucinogen.
Okay.
Which has a sorry, I can't remember the gentleman's name.
Do you smoke it?
Is he still there?
No, it's not. Do you smoke DMT?
No, it's
or a hit. He's talking about a hit. What do we do with what's a hit of DMT?
I've never done it, so I'm not. I think it might be injected, or it might be tablet form. I don't think it's smoking.
Okay.
It's certainly a doctor called Rick Strassman, who did a very interesting book where he did research with DMT. It's called the DMT, the Spirit Molecule, I think, a couple of years ago it came out. And
Although, interestingly, again, you know, he was hoping that, because it was kind of a follow-up to original LSD research and that sort of thing, and ayahuasca and various other hallucinogens. And DMT is a manufactured thing that is reasonably controllable, I think, is what they're saying. And it has a certain, you know, it only lasts, the trip lasts for a, you know, reasonably limited amount of time. It's quite a few hours, but it's kind of more controllable than some of the other hallucinogens. And
I went to college with a guy named Rick Strassman who was doing a few pharmaceutical experiments in the dorm. I wonder if it's the same guy.
It may even be the same chap.
Let me, before we get to some other questions here, you do talk about hallucinogenics in the book, right? I remember reading one of the chapters about, you talk a little bit about it.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to confess to experiences here or explain how they relate to what?
But actually, no, it's a part of my personal experience that is still to be worked on. Yeah, I'll be careful what I say. But
what can we learn from it, though? What can, from the hallucinogenic, from the manufactured experience?
Well, people who are experienced with this stuff will say that potentially there is a difference between the natural hallucinogens and the things that we manufacture, although it's not something I can comment on. Certainly, I've repeatedly heard it said that you might regard the taking of hallucinogens, if you like, as a kickstart to being able to achieve more regular altered states of consciousness via meditation afterwards. I think most people say that the, you know, going through the natural route of meditation in the end is the most rewarding, but that takes a long time if that's all you do. And I've heard a lot of people suggest that if you take hallucinogens, it can kickstart the process and act as a catalyst to move you on, if you like.
All right. Josh is in New Brunswick on Coast to Coast AM for Ian Lawton, The Big Book of the Soul. Josh?
Mr. Lawton, Mr. Pundit, it's an honor to be on the air with you. You guys are both brilliant. I'm a big fan of yours individually.
Thank you.
That's really interesting work. So I look forward to hearing your question, Josh.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, I've been a big fan of Coast to Coast for a long time, and actually I heard the both of you quite a bit, and I appreciate that little discussion you guys just had. That was really cool about the different, if you guys have any questions for me about, you know, psychotropic drugs.
Are you the expert on psychotropic drugs, are you?
Nah, I've been here and there. I mean, I've never done DMT, but
how can you trust an experience of the soul if it's manufactured by a chemical, Josh?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, You really, that's the great thing about the soul is trusting it or not trusting it is kind of part of it.
Well, but, you know, I say that I think that there could be experiences that we can manufacture, right, through chemicals. You can give somebody a chemical that makes them feel like they're on fire, but they aren't actually on fire, thank God. And when you're having an experience that's on drugs, do you ever really feel like you've had an authentic breakthrough that you would in an organic experience purely of the soul?
A coin flip, if you ask me. I mean, I don't know if that question was meant.
It's a coin flip. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
all right,
it could go either way, you know what I mean?
Well, okay. Well, I'll have to let that rest on its own merit. We'll come back to that coming up. Then last half hour, your questions and comments for Ian Lawton, The Big Book of the Soul. We'll go around the country one more time with your experiences in any of these aspects of the source, the holographic aspects of the source, next on Coast to Coast AM. So, heading into our last half hour with Ian Lawton, we're talking about the aspects of the soul, the source, as everything ties together, kind of like the show does. You know, think about it. You know, we have so many different topics, so many different ways of exploring the same mystery, different pieces of the puzzle in different hands. Not everybody may have the big picture, but somehow we're slowly putting it together. Maybe somewhere there is the source of it all, the great source. Some people might call it God. Ian Lawton is less inclined to use that language, but either way you look at it, could it be that we are all part of the same divine? And we use holographic image not to mean that it's all an illusion, but that it's a holographic aspect of the same source, that's where the connectivity comes back to it. And so it is. We'll figure out where you are with it next. Your questions and comments on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, let's pick it up with John in Tennessee on a wild card line for Ian Lawton, the big book of the soul. John?
What, hello, Ian.
Hi.
How you doing? Now, is it doctor or mister?
Mister.
Okay. I was wanting to ask, I know it sounds like a silly question, but are you familiar with something like intracarnation?
Sorry, say the word again?
Basically, this sounds so stupid, absorbing someone who has died recently. I mean, like taking on their personality traits, kind of like someone who's had a drastic surgical procedure where they take on personality traits of someone who has just... Am I making sense?
I'm familiar with the concept of possession. Are we talking, by a spirit that's passed on? Are we talking about the same thing here or something else?
It's someone who has passed on, but I don't know that possession is the right word because right. It's almost like a superimposing of two photographs.
Okay.
Like you start behaving in ways that.
Are we talking about an almost kind of schizophrenic experience where you...
Surprisingly enough, yes. I mean,
yeah.
This sounds so foolish and crazy. I mean...
Let me give you another metaphor. A little bit like having a computer that boots up with two different operating systems.
Yeah, I mean, you almost experience things from two points of view and you don't know... Which one is you?
All right.
Is,
Ian?
I'm guessing this is a personal experience for you, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You think you know who the other person is or not?
I know who they were supposed to have been.
Yeah.
Is it an unborn soul?
No. It was somebody that was supposed to have been here. It's really awkward.
Yeah.
We're having a hard time following you exactly, but go ahead, Ian. Want to just...
Far be it for me to be judgmental about anything, but I mean, my suggestion would be that, for what it's worth, that things like this, whether it's possession or something slightly different, my understanding is that's not a particularly healthy thing, and it's probably worth trying to get a little bit of help, whether it's medical, conventional, psychiatric help, or whether it be working with somebody to try and do a bit of spirit release work or anything like that. I don't think it's a very healthy situation to be in, for what it's worth. I don't know how you yourself feel about it.
It sounds a little tortured, and he sounded tortured even in just trying to describe
yes,
it.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
If you're that, things are like that, then you really do need to get some help somewhere along the line. I have nothing listed on West of the Rockies. Am I missing something there? Sam in Tacoma, for some reason, didn't pop up on my screen. Sam, you're talking with Ian Lawton. Go ahead.
Hi there, Ian. You gentlemen were talking about the possibility of somebody passing on and leaving a clue or coming back and telling about something in the past. But I had a situation where a woman who I had a relationship with and then became friends with, we always used to talk about the fact that if one of us went first, we would attempt to contact the other.
Yeah.
And on Thanksgiving Day of 2000, she passed away unexpectedly at the age of 46 from cardiac arrest. And in the ensuing months after that, through April of the following year, I had numerous, numerous intense encounters with her. And one of the most interesting things that happened was that she, I say gave me, because I don't know where else they would have come from, she gave me three dreams that accurately foretold the future. And the first of those dreams was one that I awoke from with, all I can describe it is imagine if you were a small child in a swimming pool and somebody suddenly came over and picked you right up out of the water onto the dry land. Well, that's how dramatic the awakening from this dream was. And the information in the dream was incredibly specific. And I couldn't understand exactly what it was about. You know, I'm not going to get into all the details,
yeah.
But anyway, within a few days, the exact events of the dream occurred, and as they were occurring before my eyes, I was almost in a state of shock.
Mm-hmm.
So within a couple of, another week or so went by, and I had another dream like this. Well, this time, I made the good sense of calling friends and telling them about it, and sure enough, within a few days, the same thing happened. The dream occurred, and this time, it was something that was a news item, and my cell phone was ringing off the hook with friends calling me, and then another one occurred, and that was the end of that.
Mm.
And within a few months, there were a couple of more dramatic interludes with her, you know, actually doing physical manifestations in my environment, and that end of it. Have you ever heard of something like that happening?
Yes, I have. Although yours sounds like a very good example of it, I think that's absolutely terrific. Because, for what it's worth, while I don't like to sound elitist about these things, I would say that your friend was quite an experienced soul. Because one of the messages we get from Interlife Research is that most people, when they pass on, they desperately want to contact their close friends and relatives and spouses and whatever to let them know that they're still there and that they're okay. But they just can't do it. A lot of people find it very hard and they get very frustrated with it. Whereas obviously your close friend was able to do it and do it in quite dramatic ways. So I think she must have been quite an experienced soul to be able to do that. And that's wonderful examples. I think that's absolutely terrific.
Well, what do you think it suggests when you learn events of the future?
Well, she was only giving you stuff very close, in the very close future, wasn't she, if I've understood it correctly? You know, within a couple of days away.
Yes, within a week.
Yeah, I think any suggestion that the long-term, even medium to long-term future is predetermined is completely wrong, because all of the messages we get from all of the best spiritual sources suggest that it's all about having free will to do what, you know, you might have some broad life plans that you've agreed before you come down, but it is all about exercising your own free will to do whatever you think is right at the time. And if you depart from your life plan, then so be it. You know, hopefully you come back to it in another way later on. So any suggestion that, you know, somebody, even a discarnate spirit, was able to predict the long-term or medium-term future, I would struggle with. But you know, arguably, the closer the time period, the shorter the time period, the more able they are to foresee things that are going to happen.
Ian Lawton, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm glad it's not over yet. Let's get to John in Minneapolis, the big book of the soul. John, you're talking with Ian Lawton.
Hey, what's up, Ian?
Hi, John.
Your neighbor, at least one of the Ian's neighbor.
Yes.
From across the river. First, I wanted to butter you guys up a little bit. I love Coast to Coast. Me and my lady friend, first date came out. We were both Coast to Coast fans, and I knew she was a keeper. So,
good.
Anyway, I first heard about the holographic universe sort of model, and didn't know what he meant at first. But after a while, it started to really make a lot of sense. And like one translation of the Tao, there's one part like, how do I know all these things? I know that the universe is this way by what is within me. And so that's just a little bit of support for that idea. And let's see.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I wanted to get back to you, Ian, too, about evidence for people coming or sending messages to lives forward.
Yeah.
And it's not direct evidence, but there is a Japanese collection of ghost stories on Wikipedia.
Mm.
One of them is called The Story of Otei, O-T-E-I.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a young couple gets married, wife gets sick and dies, and like right before she dies, she makes an oath that, you know, she's going to try to be together with him, you know, forever. And then she dies, meets another woman, marries her. Wedding night, she goes into a trance and says, hey, I'm your first wife. We're all together. The girl wakes up, has no memory of it. So it's just a Japanese legend, not super evidence, but there you go.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take that. Thanks for that comment there, John. And go ahead, Ian.
The bit I thought was more interesting was what John was talking about today with the holographic stuff at the beginning there.
Right.
I think we've got to be... One thing I would say is to be a little bit careful with this, because there is a lot of talk, there's been a lot of talk in various quite well-known books about the idea of the holographic universe, and that the whole universe is holographic, or indeed that the brain and the memory work in a holographic way. And there's a lot of good work has been done. But a lot of that, if you read those books carefully, has tended to take us towards the view that it is all just about the one and the all, and there is this illusion aspect again, and there's no such thing as individual souls. You know, I would like to stress that when I talk about the holographic soul, I'm using it in a very different way. I'm talking about the holographic soul particularly, and that's why I think this work is slightly new, and it's certainly a different way of using the model of the hologram for spirituality, because goes away from this idea of it all being illusory and that sort of thing. So we do have to be careful about how this word hologram is applied to spiritual work.
Where are you with kind of a Platonic understanding of the soul, right? It would be Plato would have thought about it as being a lesser reflection of a greater whole.
Yes, I mean, to that extent, it's the same sort of idea. I mean, I'm not suggesting... I mean, there's plenty of... There's plenty of sources that, or not plenty, but there are sources, spiritual sources, good ones, that talk about this same idea. But I think they were all talking, of course, before the idea of the hologram had even been understood. So I think I'm just trying to now sort of concretize it. That's not a very elegant word, is it?
But anyway, no, it's a great word, actually. I think it's a perfectly, and I plan on using it in Scrabble later on this week. So somebody puts down concrete, I'm concretizing it. I totally get it. Let's get to Jamie in Columbus, Ohio, on Coast to Coast for Ian Lawton. Go ahead, Jamie.
Hey, Ian, how you doing tonight?
Hi, Jamie.
Ian, I just got to tell you, I love your show on the weekends. I'm really looking forward to hearing the family secret of the Kentucky Twins here when the story's ready to come out.
It's coming. It's coming, I promise. It'll be on a blog soon. Thank you.
Good stuff. All right, Ian the author, here's my question. It says in the Bible that God created the earth and heavens in 6 days.
Yeah.
So did the source create our reality and physical realm, or was it already here, and did it use mechanisms like evolution to create us?
A great question.
That's a terrific question. excuse me. Well, I don't think anybody would be surprised to learn that I don't go with the biblical view of everything getting created in 6 days. And I'm very happy with it. Again, the most profound spiritual sources that I know of, none of them would go with a creationist viewpoint. They're all perfectly happy to accept the idea of evolution. The only rider I would put on that, and I guess it is, excuse me, a kind of an intelligent design viewpoint, which is that the interlife regression research does suggest that the evolutionary mechanisms are given a little bit of a nudge and a helping hand sometimes, which I think is what intelligent design would be. And, of course, when people talk about creation versus evolution and all the rest of it, it really begs the question of where did life evolve in the universe in the first place and how? Because it's all very well saying that, for example, life on Earth evolved maybe because of the panspermia idea that primitive cell forms came down trapped in meteorite rock and et cetera, et cetera. But that only begs the question of, well, where did those life forms evolve in the first place? Where else in the universe and how? And there's some very interesting work being done on the idea of, and this is where the quantum world does come into play somewhat, is, you know, exactly how many universes are there, and how do they, you know, if there are multiple universes, how do they relate to each other? And my take on that, because we're running out of time, I think, and it's a big subject, but for what it's worth, I think the most fruitful work is the work that suggests that there's not unlimited numbers of multiple universes all operating at the same time, all next to each other. I think that would be a complete waste of effort, and it doesn't strike me as a very elegant theory from a spiritual or philosophical perspective. But the idea that we have,
universes that develop and expand and work for, you know, many billions of years and then contract back again, and then maybe that spawns another universe later on, and that universe is able to build on the experience of what has gone before in the previous universe. And people talk about that operating through quantum linkages. I think that is very, very interesting work, and that's those sort of ideas are well worth pursuing.
You know, I just got to say, I don't know what transpermia is, but I don't care. I will never fly them, no matter how reasonable the fare. I don't care. you know what, though? I mean, going back to this idea about the soul and trying different ways for us to understand it, I'll throw an idea out at the biblical, which I understand if we were going to be literalist about six periods of 24 hours. But are you familiar with sort of biblical numerology?
No, it's not a specialist area of mine, okay. I have to say.
Oh, that's right. I'll throw out the idea that anytime you see the number seven,
yeah,
in biblical numerology, it implies wholeness,
mm-hmm,
completeness.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime you see the number six, it implies incompleteness or,
yeah,
the opposite of wholeness, right? So,
yeah,
and then when we amplify those things, like, you know, 7 times 70,
yeah,
or 7 times 7, 49, the Jubilee year, or 666, you know, we,
yeah,
think of amplifying the evilness of incompleteness. So I would push you to think about the creation story a little bit more mystically.
And that, oh, sorry, really... look, I don't have a problem with the fact that that may well have a mythical, a numerological or
yeah, it's kind of cool that way.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool that way because,
yeah,
it's sort of like,
yeah,
it was sort of incomplete and it was very human, and then the seven came in and made it wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think,
yeah,
that's kind of the cool thing about the creation story to me.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean,
yeah,
obviously, I do have a problem with the literal interpretation of it.
Right. Right, which I don't. Even literalists often will say, a day doesn't have to. It can be God's day. So it could be 6 million years for God's day. You know, for all.
Yeah.
But
of course.
Anyway, I'll just throw this in there.
I think it's just more interesting when you think about it from the point of view of whole universes and not just from an Earth point of view. I think that gets much more interesting. Yeah.
Other than that, I'm all for nude people running around in the garden. Margarita is in Los Angeles for Ian Lawton. Margarita.
Hi, great show, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thank you.
I just wanted to share my own experience along the lines of choosing your own life path or having a mission.
Yep.
It was almost like an actor reciting lines from even birth. I would recite my life path to myself every day I would wake up.
Okay.
What does that mean? You're speaking code. What do you mean?
What it means is when I would wake up every day, I had to remember who I was, what my what I had to do as far as like what my mission here on Earth was.
Hmm.
Up until the age of five, I would kind of do this every time. I didn't know that I was human. I didn't know who I was or, like, you know, it was kind of strange.
That's
like,
very
wake
interesting.
Up,
Did you ever yell out line and somebody would tell you what you were supposed to say?
It was really it felt like okay, what is it I have to do again? And then up until about the age of five, I would remember everything prior. And then, you know, I started getting cluttered with life and memories.
Right. Well, you're a perfect candidate. I'm sorry, we don't have any more time for that. It's very interesting. The Big Book of the Soul is written just for you, isn't it? Ian Lawton, Our Many Lives as Holographic Aspects of the Source. So enjoyed the conversation. Look forward to continuing it on sometime, and good luck with this new book.
Ian, thank you very much for having me on, and I'm glad you appreciate you actually having a look at the book yourself before we did the interview. I appreciate that.
And I promise I will finish it sometime soon. I'm about three quarters of the way through. I'll get her done, and I look forward to it too. In the meantime, everybody, Deus te amat, and I do too.